afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're joining We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
There we go. And now we've got all our sound situated, of course. Doesn't matter when we get here. If we get here early, we get here late. It always sounds like we got here late. Okay, today we were kind of late. All right, so I hope you guys had a good fourth and enjoyed the programming last week. If you missed it, I do hope you tune in. We had a couple of things. The one that I thought was different and should be kind of interesting because it's stuff you don't hear a lot was Brad Fitch from the Congressional Management Foundation, and he had lots of what's real and what's not going on with Congress. It was fun. Bob, we have our guest on there.
We have Bruce Moran joining us.
Bruce, good morning, good afternoon. What are you? Your afternoon, later afternoon than we are, huh?
Yes, we are.
And we are missing Martin.
Yes.
AKA Marty. I don't know. I never got an email back from him, so I sent him the email or the phone number a couple times. So
okay.
On a break, you may have to leap off and track him down for us because I have no contact information.
Okay.
Not awesome. Maybe you could, I don't know, you want to, well, he's not here. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about President Trump's speech there in Poland, or where do you want to start?
As you know, Paul Teller is a friend of ours, and he had sent us the White House communique on the Polish address. And from what I can tell and what I can see in the news media and how I feel personally is that it was terrific.
It was great.
People were giving him a standing ovation in Poland, and quite a remarkable speech by the First Lady to introduce the president, you know, himself. She was right on. We're looking at a whole new foreign policy initiative, as we saw with the NATO support given during the speech, and as we saw with the, you know, rise of President Trump as being a leader of the world, and it was just terrific, big time. You know, it's much different than what some of the takes in the media are talking about, but, you know.
Yeah,
they were saying that
a lot of detractors that don't want him to succeed, and he's done a terrific job.
Oh yeah, and they were saying this is possibly one of the best speeches he's given to date.
Yeah, somebody equating it to a Ronald Reagan speech, you know, and you know, is that kind of a momentum maker for him? And I agree, he's turning the corner and you know, making it his presidency.
Yeah, maybe
it's a wonderful thing to see.
Maybe the liberals can now concede that he's not insane.
Yeah, it's funny that insanity seems to go in and out.
That is true.
It's a random insanity.
How are you folks doing out there with the fires and things?
We
I saw that it's up in your area too.
Yeah, it's kind of all around us.
Yeah, you had the dam problem. Now are you dealing with a fire as well?
Well, oddly,
we have a lot of dam problems.
We have a lot of dam problems, yeah. Good point. Good point, Bob. Oddly enough, I was supposed to go on a tour of the Oroville Dam repair and that kind of thing. I was supposed to do that tomorrow morning, and I was debating because it's well over 100 degrees, and I don't know.
Yeah, I heard it's up to 110.
Pretty common, but I was kind of debating on that. Got a text message a little bit ago that the fire is has enough evacuations going and there's enough chaos down there. It's close enough to the dam that they've canceled that. They don't want to add any more people to that mix. So, and then we have them up north of us as well, which is pretty standard. You know, sometimes it's lightning. You know, it's garden variety things you can't do a lot about. But you know, just our forest policy over a long time now is really come to a.
Yeah, it's coming home to roost.
It's really come to a head. We've got way too much fuel on the forests. I just wanted to let people know before we leave the idea of the speech in Poland, for those people that were working and, you know, only saw, like, itty-bitty news bites or whatever, we posted the whole speech, printed the entire speech. It's right on the website for today. So just says President Trump's speech in Poland. You can click on it and read the whole thing. And Melania's comments at the beginning are on there, too. Which is really nice. It's kind of fun to read it. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a reader, but I like reading the speech rather than listening to it sometimes because it's not you're not distracted by camera angles or people's I don't know. clapping.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I always like to brief myself before I see something live.
Yeah. You know, it says applause. I'm like, okay, I know what applause sounds like.
You know, I go and look at what everybody's saying, and I have my opinions, but then I'm watching what everybody's saying and saying, oh. So that's the way they're, you know, creating a narrative on this angle, and that's another angle on the narrative, and that's their angle, and this is what they want to take apart. So you see, you know, how they're deconstructing maybe a national security problem and not really addressing the issue itself. So that's how I look at it myself, you know.
I just think it's really helpful. So for the, you know, what I was actually thinking of doing was, I have a few people who have remained nameless, and I was actually thinking about just taking that printed speech and cutting out anything that said Donald Trump and just making it a printed document, you know, with no, no names, and sending it and saying, oh, wasn't this a great speech, from, you know, a few years ago, and just leave it at that. Just kind of see what response I got.
Drop out Donald Trump and insert Barack Obama.
Well, that's kind of where I was headed. I was going to hint around that it was Obama, but just take out all references to which president it was, and just for the fun of it.
So, yeah, we had a 4th of July here, and it was pretty good. It was, you know, the city did pretty well, but we also had the, you know, shootings and deaths. So, you know, that's still high.
Your classic Chicago holiday?
101 shootings, 15 deaths. You know,
wow. Just over the 4th of July?
Yeah, it was a longer weekend. You know, we had an extra day in there, so, yeah.
So you had time to kill more people. Gosh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh, my gosh.
President Trump sent in ATF here, 20 agents, so they're supporting the police on the ground, state police. You know, it's a fully integrated network, and... you know, they'll probably take them a month or two to get a handle on it. They might need to double or triple the efforts, but, you know, it's hard. You know, it's isolated. There's gangs and there's cartels, and there's a lot of different mixes of those, as you know, in a bigger city like Chicago, and the criminal activity is just high, you know.
Do you have to just really pay attention to where you go, or is it kind of...
Yes, I mean, like any bigger city, yeah.
But, I mean, there are places you just don't go, I'm sure.
Yeah. New York, LA.
You know, yeah, sure. Like everywhere.
St. Louis.
Well, that's terrible.
DC.
So before we track down Marty, I should properly introduce our guest here, Bruce Moran. He's been on with us before. He brings us all sorts of good national security information. He is the National Security Advisor with the Security Solutions Technology Company, which is a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, security assessments, and cybersecurity, geospatial, all sorts. I mean, kind of a long list there. But Bruce focuses on strategic planning for national security issues. And so as a consultant, he works with public officials, U.S. government committees, departments, agencies, think tanks, and corporations. So he works on all sorts of stuff, and he's always shooting us a little thing like, hey, want to have so-and-so on? Let's talk about it. So I think most of us know little to nothing. I'm just going to throw down for most of us, we know little to nothing about the Assyrian Christians. And most people, I think, when they hear it on the news, think they're talking about Christians in Syria, the country. But it's really Assyrian, Assyrian. And so if we can find him, we have Martin Yomaran with the Assyrian American National Federation. He's going to come on and talk to us about that. Want us to take a quick break? Maybe you could call him?
Okay, sure.
All right.
Okay.
You give him a holler. We'll have a little celebration of capitalism here, and
okay,
then
very good.
And then call us right back.
All right.
All right. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night the people saw. Brother, what a night the people saw. Yes, indeed.
Well, that's for you, Bruce.
Everything old is new again.
Okay, that's true. That was when singing about Chicago and stuff like that was kind of fun. But 101 people dying over 4th of July, slightly less fun.
Right now we're having the Taste of Chicago, so it's pretty crowded down here.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It's a five-day event where there are 40 restaurants positioned on the Columbus Drive here. And it's right off the lakefront. Beautiful day today. It's like 75, 80 degrees, and it's crowded.
Yeah, we wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
it's 100 and who the heck knows what.
I think our low was about 80 today, last night.
I walked the dog this morning at 75. By the time I got home, it was 87, so it gives you some idea of what's going on. It was 7 o'clock. All righty, so we are joined by Martin Yomaran. And do you prefer to be called Marty or Martin?
Marty's fine.
All right, I wasn't sure on the whole Marty Martin thing. I know how that goes.
He has his own TV program, too. You see it, you know.
No kidding. Well, see, it's kind of funny for me because...
No, I was being facetious.
He can have a TV
talking
program.
Talking about the Ernest Borgnine movie.
He's going to be Marty Martin, you know.
We have some very serious stuff to talk about.
Of course
and,
we do. Always.
Marty's family's been involved in this for... basically their lifetime. It's their community, and it's a very sad and heart-wrenching situation that's been going on with the Assyrian community. So I'll leave it to Marty to start it off, and he can start giving you some details about what
thanks,
he's been
Bruce.
Doing.
Aaron and Bill, thank you for having us on to shed some light on the Assyrian Christian story. Obviously, since the fall of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, the Assyrian Christian population, pretty much estimates were over 2.5 million and now have dwindled less than 300,000 in Iraq. And, you know, it's been a, for the Assyrian Christians, it's been 100 years of continuous genocide since the Ottoman Empire, the fall of the Ottoman Empire from 1916 till now. You know, we saw over 750,000 Assyrians massacred then, and then continuous throughout the years. So, in 1933, the Sumela massacre in Iraq, where over 3,000 Assyrian men and women and children were massacred, we created the Assyrian American National Federation here in America, and it was to help the Assyrian community, just to pretty much organize and get the people assistance, humanitarian aid back home. And, to the new refugee Assyrians that were coming in to America, you know, because of the persecution back home, which is continuous to this day. And since the fall of Saddam, it's been worse and worse where we've been scattered all over the world. So what Bruce and I have been working on, and other Assyrians in the community, activism with regards to advocating for our own, internationally protected safe zone, or it would be the Nineveh Plain province where our, the capital of Assyria, Nineveh, was. If you recall what ISIS was destroying, the city of Nimrud, when they invaded, it's just been a continuous onslaught of invasions and Assyrians and other minorities being persecuted and being forced to flee their ancestral homeland. And that's what we're trying to do is help advocate and raise awareness about what we could do as Assyrians and then as Americans and just as humanitarians and how to stop, the genocide and stop the onslaught, per se.
Sure, because, I mean, my guess is that all of these people, they don't want to necessarily leave their own country. And then they don't want to necessarily move to someplace else, even though that would be a lot safer. But they just, it kind of sounds like, same old story. They'd like to just be left alone.
Yeah, can I interject something here? You're saying these people, those are Marty's uncles and aunts and other friends and family that are living in Assyria.
Right.
These are like American Italians. You're talking about their family living in Italy. If you're talking to me, you're talking about my family living in Ireland. So that's what you're talking to Marty about.
Right.
This isn't something that's otherworldly, and we're trying to, you know, save people from genocide. These are family members.
Right.
Yeah, this is family.
But as
Marty, can you tell them something about your ma serving over there and your cousin and stuff? I mean, this is American patriots right here who are serving, helping out the U.S. government serving over there.
After the fall of Saddam, when the U.S. went in, you know, obviously not everybody speaks Arabic or the native tongue, so they needed translators and people that they could trust with translation. So there was a hiring frenzy and hiring of translators. And my mom, you know, who's educated here in America, but obviously was born in Iraq, decided to join. And she's been a translator, linguist, since 2006. So for the past 11 years, she's been in Iraq and currently serving as a contractor for the Department of Defense, State at the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. In addition to that, my cousin, Edmund Octivo, who's the Midwest Regional Director, was a 20-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps, gunnery sergeant, retired. You know, he served five tours, three in Iraq and two in Afghanistan, and was also wounded in one of the battles. And so, you know, his heroics, you know, especially it hit close to home, because not only, you know, is he defending, fighting for the U.S., he's also, you know, trying to help his native ancestral, you know, homeland liberated from dictators and what. But now what we've seen is ever since the fall of Saddam, it's just been a continuous a vacuum. And you're seeing that when Aaron said, you know, our people just want to be left alone. Imagine if you're a 40-year-old and you're an engineer or a doctor, right? And then you're forced to flee and then come to another country where you don't really know the language. You're not going to get certified. What do you do? What do you do there, you know? And so that's why they're like, look, if you protect it, internationally protected area, and they did it with a no-fly zone, if you remember in the early 90s when Saddam attacked the northern part of Iraq, where he killed Assyrians and Kurdish people at that with the gas chemical attacks. They had a protected no-fly zone since the early 90s. So it is possible, especially today with today's technology, you know, they can have an internationally protected zone, just monitoring from the sky with drones and whatnot, and then having the local forces, local Assyrian and other minorities that are independent and not, you know, tied to any, you know, like political group or any side, just independent people taking care of their own cities and villages and towns.
And there's quite a few, we're looking at 3.2 million, so they could, you know, how many of them would support efforts back in their home territory? You know, some of them are in Kurdistan, of course, but you have them in, you know, you have, like, Marty's friends of friends, they're in Jordan, you know, they're in Turkey,
Lebanon.
I mean, they're in Iran,
and then,
so they want to go back home,
and... Right. Yeah.
You know, that's what they want to do, and that's their ancestral homeland. That's where they grew up. That has a lot of strong leanings towards, you know, because we're Christians and Catholics and Orthodox. That's where they're from. That goes back to, is that right, Marty? St. Thomas and St. Thaddeus? Am I forgetting somebody?
The start of Christianity, because, you know, when they say, who are Assyrians? Assyrians are, you know, we speak Aramaic, which is the language Jesus Christ spoke. And plus, you know, the history of where Joseph was from and everything. So it really hits home. It's, you know, they say the Garden of Eden and all those biblical places. I mean, it's significant to history, and especially what's been happening now is just really heart-wrenching, especially if you just heard, just with a finding against Hobby Lobby and what happened there with the antiquities, and there was Assyrian artifacts also included in the theft and whatnot. And this is, you know, imagine your history. Not only are you forcibly, but then your antiquities and your ruins are destroyed, and then everything is sold to the highest bidder, and then you're pretty much they're erasing your history,
right.
your rights to the land, and that's where we advocate and we try to push and get support, and last recognize that ISIS had committed genocide. After that, the administration fell short because nothing's been done since then. We're still trying to get that province protected. Nice. When ISIS invaded, now everything's being liberated. What's going to happen to the land? Is it going to be redeveloped? It's going to be reestablished. Security has to be the first thing, and then you have to develop it. The roads, the schools, jobs. It's really important. And after that, the resources that are there, and I think this is the reason why it's been hard for us to get back, is because there's a lot of oil and there's a lot of interest, outside interest for that land, specifically for that oil. And it's really tough because it's also our ancestral homeland and it's indigenous protected by, and should be. But that's where we're finding the difficulty, and hopefully we could do something to speed up the process with regards to support, because they've liberated Mosul. ISIS is pretty much done. Now the question becomes, what happens? What does the future look like for the Assyrians and other minorities that are left unprotected? Because when ISIS came in, we had no protection, not from the Iraqi army and not from the Kurdish Peshmerga who fled because ISIS came through. So, our goal is to try to make sure that we have our own police force and our own our own soldiers there protecting that land, because that's their homes. They're protecting, they're defending their parents, they're defending, protecting their families. Those are their homes, that's our land. If nobody has an affiliation to that land and no feel for it, they're not going to want to defend it.
Right.
They're just going to leave. That's not us. And that's what happened in Mosul, because they had Shia Muslims protecting Mosul, which is mostly Sunni. So when they came in, they just walked away. They didn't need to fight for it. That wasn't, But you go try to fight in Basra, in their homeland, in their stake, in their area, they would defend that more. And so
that makes sense. And, I guess my point in saying that was I can hear what usually happens is, oh, well, we just need to bring everyone here. I mean, that seems to always be the answer, is let's bring everyone here. And so my original point in saying that was that the people themselves who live there, who are undergoing all this, all this horrible disaster area, their goal isn't to get out of there. It's to make space there that is actually safe for them. And unfortunately, our colleges have kind of ruined that whole idea of safe space. We'll have to suspend all of our mocking for the purposes of this show. usually we're making fun of safe space, but gotta take a really, really quick break, fellas.
People, like I grew up in Chicago, in my area, we know where everything is at. I don't know if you remember, there was a horrific situation with Richard Speck killing 8 student nurses or Filipino nurses. Everybody in our neighborhood got up and started looking and combing the grounds, the prairies. We live by a lot of ocean-going ship areas where they have ports. Everybody was combing the ports. I mean, the whole neighborhood got up. You're talking about 25, 30,000 people start looking. That's what would happen in the Nivea Plain region, in these places where they can protect themselves with their own police, with their own military. They know where everything's at.
Sure.
They know where to look. You can't hide. See what I mean?
Hey, Bruce.
They know where all the nooks and crannies are.
Sure.
You put somebody else in there that's from Baghdad or maybe someplace in Kurdistan, they don't know what's going on. They don't know how to look around.
And they don't care. All right, fellas, we'll be back in just two minutes there. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
Their land, their homes, their friends, their families, their neighborhoods. They'll go out and they'll come.
Okay. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading.
You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. We gotta get out of this place.
And we're back. Sorry about that unceremonious break previous. Whenever we have two people on the phone, it's always kind of hard for everybody to hear each other. So,
hey, Marty, I want to back up just a little bit. When we were talking about when Saddam was in power, the Assyrian community at that time was pretty heavily persecuted by him. When he left, when we got him out of there, you said it got worse. Why, what didn't we do to make it better at that time? And why did it go the way it went?
Well, one, it got worse for us because they see us as Western allies. They see us as Westernized, and they saw us, just like I told you when my mom and other linguists were working with the U.S. military, after the liberation, they actually also started targeting us, because in those, especially the hotbeds like Baghdad, in those areas where actually there's a heavy population of Assyrian Christians, they started blowing up the churches and started, because they saw us as a unprotected group, because again, we're not Shia, we're not Sunni, we're Christian, we share the same Christian values of the Western occupiers as they saw us. And there was no solution. They thought, you know, initially when they thought, you know, I remember they said they were greeting us with candy and when they were, we liberated them from Saddam. But what happened is there was no solution with regards to what happens after.
Right.
If you notice, maybe this is a comparable country, but when Hosni Mubarak for Egypt was out of power, and then Muslim Brotherhood came into power, and which was a complete opposite, or some, you know, the different group. It actually shifted Egypt's country into chaos and all that stuff, and they started going after different groups and whatnot. But when Al-Sisi came into power after, and you know, he was just it was a different person, but at least Egypt came back a little bit. Even though persecution of Coptics happened there. But at least they had a different plan, and they realized, you know, Iraq was a different animal, because once you got rid of Saddam, you got rid of the military, you got rid of everything. And the reason why Egypt was sustained was because the military stayed in power, was there. It was just that Mubarak was removed. In Iraq, I think if the military was you know, maybe something would have been different if they, because what happened is you pretty much got rid of everybody and everything, and then what do these people do for jobs? What do they do for their livelihood? What you pretty much uprooted and lifted, you just eliminated every part of the government. So I think what happened is there should have been a better plan of succession when Saddam was taken out of power. Somebody else could have stepped in, everything else could have remained in place, but it was just pretty much, you know, the bombing and the rebuilding that had to take place. You know, you start from scratch, and it's really hard, and especially shifting from the, and this is, again, you got to look at, you know, the, I'm not an Islamic expert or whatnot with the Shia Sunni, but if the Sunnis were majority of the government with Saddam, obviously, and the Shia were they didn't have anybody in government supporting them as much, and not everybody like that. So it was really like, you know, it was a change of the guard, but it was complete change, and that's not always good. I mean, we'd love to make every country like America, but you can't. You can't force our way of life on other countries. It
right.
just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. So the area where your family comes from, how many different cultures are in that area. It's not just Assyrians. Who else lives there, and would there be continued struggle between the groups there?
There is already. You know, you see it with the Kurds. You see it with the Sunnis. So there's different groups there. Obviously, we're the ancestral people of that homeland. But I'm not going to claim, you know, the history of Assyria, because if I want to claim it, I can say all of Iraq is Assyria, right? It's our land. But let's be real with regards to what's happening now. And there are other groups, there are other people living there, and they've also called Iraq home for hundreds of years. So there are, like, the Shebek and the Yazidis. The Yazidis also faced the tremendous genocide in Sinjar and other areas. So they're also a group, and they are, you know, persecuted just like the Assyrians. But what's happened, the groups that are there, everybody's vying for positioning now. And this is the perfect segue with regards to what the KRG, the Kurdish Regional Government, is trying with regards to a referendum vote that's going to be happening later in September, and try to give the people a voice and possible, you know, because they're seeking independence for Kurdistan. I have a hard time saying Kurdistan, because that's ancestral Assyria, and it's northern Iraq, and Arbil is Arbilo, which is an old Assyrian city. But these areas are contested. They are, you know, for many, many years, Assyrians, Kurds, Arabs, all of them have been living peacefully together. And even though throughout history, you know, since the early 1900s, the Kurds, and Arabs and others persecuted Christians, but it has been relatively peaceful. Like in early 90s, when Saddam was in power, and he was against, you know, the Kurds in the north, the Assyrians and Kurds were fighting against Saddam, and they were actually, you know, living together in the north under the no-fly zone, and they sought some peaceful times and worked together and whatnot. So hopefully there could be some, you know, everybody works together, but what we're seeing is that the Nineveh Plain is now a piece of hot land that they're trying to annex into the KRG area, and they're disputing it, calling it a disputed area. We don't see it as disputed, because obviously that's our capital. We see it. Nineveh's right there. You know, the capital of Nineveh. So it's like, you know, we don't see it as disputed, but obviously because of the numbers, you know, the demographics have changed, but they forced our people to flee. Our people would not have left if it wasn't for the persecution, if it wasn't for, you know, they were forced out, as you saw in what happened with the ISIS invasion. That was it. They pretty much uprooted in Qarakosh, which is Baghdad. And Vice News had something about this. But when ISIS came in, 50,000 Assyrians fled that night, prior to ISIS coming in.
Wow.
50,000.
Yeah.
I want to do a referendum vote, but our people are not there. As Bruce said, we're scattered all over. So, and they're trying to force expatriates or Assyrians that are living in other countries not to have a voice. They're saying you can't vote if you're out of the country, because they want the people on the ground to vote. Well, if we don't have a voice and we're not being allowed to vote, how can we? You know,
right.
How can we have a true voice of where we want? And then they're saying, you know, well, the people on the ground can decide if they want to be a part of Kurdistan or remain part of Iraq. They can decide there. But, you know, it's like gerrymandering and what they do here in the state of Illinois to try to fix the districts for their benefit, you know?
Sure, sure. And it's difficult to have a voice and be in the country when, if you go back to the country, they come after you. So
exactly.
I understand.
Yeah, and if you don't have a safe zone to go for transitioning,
you're doomed.
You're a sitting duck.
Yeah, you can't go back.
And it doesn't make common sense unless you have a relatively safe region just to orientate. You need to orientate yourself to get your, focus back on where you're going to go, what you're going to do, and how you're going to do it. You got to find out what's going on in your town or village,
and who's there, who you know, and then you reestablish yourself.
Right.
It takes a while. If you're talking about a million or two people, and then if you want them to vote, and if they want it to be the Nivea Plain province, these people need to be there to talk about how they want their, you know, land to be secured and safe. So we have a law and order fabric built in to a safe zone that extends out, and where you have the local people who are Assyrians, Yazikis, and Sinjar in different regions protecting their own land, their own homes, their own businesses.
So how does that work?
Just to jump in.
How does that work with the 50,000 people that fled? I'm sure they owned land, they had homes, and they basically had to flee. What happened to their land and their homes? And is it being occupied now by somebody else who says it's theirs now because you left? Or how does that work?
No, ISIS destroyed it. ISIS destroyed pretty much everything. And it wasn't just ISIS. There was also reports of Peshmerga. Also, because obviously when they're clearing a what, they also destroyed. But nothing was saved, and they're just rebuilding everything. They've actually started to rebuild in a couple places, but they need support. Obviously, the financials, the support financially. I mean, you know, Senator Mark Kirk, who's now Tammy Duckworth took his place, Senator Duckworth, but... You know, Senator Mark Kirk, he was our congressman in the 10th prior to becoming a senator, helped start support for the minorities through appropriations. And even that money that was slated for our people, which is a continued resolution each year, wound up going in the wrong hands and not to our people. And say they had corruption, and corruption's big in every country, but sure. They especially there. It never made it to the minorities, the redevelopment, reestablishment. And then, you know, prior to ISIS, they had everything happening, so.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. We need to take one more quick break. I just wanted to let people know that I've added some maps, because that's the big piece of the puzzle we're leaving out on this whole thing. And Marty, you'll forgive us, as dopey Americans, we're not... we're just, you know, it keeps changing. We all learned about Persia and Mesopotamia when we were in school, and then all the countries changed names and they all moved around. It's really hard to figure out where everybody is these days. Maybe you could give us a little geography when we come back to help tie down some of these locations. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That's probably a pretty big ask right now. So, Marty, can you give us some, give us a quick geography lesson, like of countries that we actually know now. Where was Assyria?
So Assyria made up, not with the invasions and whatnot, or back in the day where it grew, but historically Assyria is... Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria. Parts of, so Syria derives from Assyria. The word Syria derives from Assyria. So that's how that came to be. But, it's obviously today you know them as Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Turkey, but that was Assyria. And so, our ancestors, there was different parts. There were some from the Urmia region of Iran, the Hakkari region, Hakkari Mountains of Turkey, and you had you had other areas like in Syria, where you see it now as Damascus. Damascus is the main capital, but where Qamishli and all those by the, you know, between the Tigris and the Euphrates, the rivers there, you had main Assyrian villages and towns and areas, so that were historic. And actually, if you just look at the history, what they're digging up now, I think in Syria, it was another Assyrian town that, you know, just the ruins. Whatever they're digging up from the ground is just coming up Assyrian right. ruins of the old empire back from the historical times.
Now,
that's what we're trying to state and claim that, like, look, throughout our history, this is what's been happening. This is, you know, we're the ancestral indigenous people of that land. We deserve to have a voice.
Right.
And yes, we're scattered all over the world, but that's not by choice. When people have a sword and they tell you to convert, pay tax, or die, it's like, what are your choices? And then do you want your kids and your daughters to live under Sharia law or other areas where Christians are looked at as a commodity, and their daughters are looked at as a piece of meat, and then they're, you know, and you don't want that. And, you know, we've lost so many to Arabization and Kurdification and many things like that, that it's just sad to talk about. But, you know, all we're trying to do is just protect ourselves.
Right,
you know,
areas
and people.
Where do the Yazidis come into this? Do they occupy the same area?
Yeah, so the Yazidis are also within that area in the northern part. They have some parts where Sinjar Mountain, the Sinjar region, and there's also villages and towns there, and they actually share a similar history to the Assyrians with the timeline. And so they're along those lines there, but again, it's, you know, the Nineveh Plain province that was approved in January 2014. In January 2014 in Iraq, that was to be a province, was for the minorities, which were the Assyrian, Yazidi, and Shebek, and Turkoman, you know. So it was for the minorities that were, you know, that did not have a area. So
now, were they all Christian?
No, they're not. They are not all, no. So the Yazidis have their own religion. Some are Muslim, some are, I'm not 100% with regards to their religion, but it's not Christian. It's something else related to, that's why they were seen as like, by ISIS and others as like, kind of like, witches and studying witchcraft. And so it wasn't really, you know, that's why they went to, you know, they slaughtered so many in Sinjar.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's not something to repeat, and you think in the 21st century that we're living in right now, that beheadings and massacres of that size would not be something, you know,
we might have moved on from that.
Yeah, you would think that beheadings are not happening and not occurring, but they do. And
so,
just,
what's your guess on, because obviously none of us are in control of this, but why is it that we don't hear particularly about the Assyrian people and the Assyrian situation?
Is it because
over here?
Is it because they're not on the ground there?
Because of what? Sorry, Bill?
Is it because they're not on the ground? Is it because they are spread out all over that they're not a factor in the dialogue?
You do have them there, and they are on the ground. It's just their voices, you know, when we were talking previous administrations, when we said we're Assyrian, you know, because we like to say more, that's our ethnicity, that's our identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our religion is Christianity. But when we kept saying Christianity, the previous administration said, well, we don't want to be seen as helping Christians against other religions, and that'd be seen, well, that's a Christian country helping their Christian brothers, and that's not what we want. We want to help
everybody. We don't want that.
And so it's a freedom of religious freedom, acts and everything with regards to what we were trying to do with Tom Lantos, commissions and others. They're just like, look, we're trying to raise awareness about what's happening. So we used pretty much from the media side, Iraqi Christians or Syrian Christians, or, you know, but that took away from our ethnic identity and our Syrian roots. And so maybe that it was messaging, but they kept saying to us, and these are people in media, in PR with regards to this, saying, look, the only way you're going to get the media attention is by saying Christians, Christians, Christians. But truthfully, the more we said it, the more we were persecuted for it, the more,
oh my gosh,
the more we were left aside. So really, other than
let me
okay, well, guys, we're out of the hour here, but
okay, let me talk on the other side.
Absolutely, when we come back,
I'll fill you in on what we've been doing for.
That's where I want to go.
It's been a longer time than
we just had to have
a year for us. We've been talking. Marty and I have been working on this for over 10 years.
Right on. All right, we'll be right back, fellas. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Stay tuned for hour 2 here at KCNR Shasta Redding.